Two, three. Hello.
APA, you call it,
huh? Can you tell me when you were born? Born? When were you born? Your birthday.
Oh, March 26, 1915.
When did you come to Alaska?
In 1937.
What brought you here?
Were
you Navy? Were you...
Well, all of a sudden, the back door was on the north side of our house when I left home.
So you kind of had to move out. Okay. What did you do when you got here?
Originally, I came up here. I had a cousin living here in Kodiak.
Okay.
And I decided to come up and see what this fishing was all about, I guess. And I did go... I didn't go fishing when I first came, though. I went to work for Harry Howe on running a little logging camp over in the Fog Neck.
Did you do that? How many years?
Oh. Can you hear me from here?
Yeah.
I went to work for him in spring of 38. And I worked for him for about a year, I guess. I went partners with him on a sawmill and boat and logging camp. Then I quit that, and then I went to work on in 1940 in a suction dredge, Georgia, at the Navy base. Helped set it up and get it on. Eventually I became mate on it. Mm-hmm. A lot of local boys worked under me on that there. Then from the dredge I went to the beach, drove truck, drove the fuel trucks on the base during the construction.
Right.
Then from the fuel trucks I went to the big dump trucks. Helped build the runways out over there. And there was another little thing. They had the 10-yard trucks with a long gravel deck on the bottom of them. So they loaded them too heavy, and when you dumped by the front of the truck, it'd go up in the air. There was a hill right in the middle of the runways that we took out. And we'd back up to the ocean there. And at times your truck would go up so your front wheels is as high as the cab on the one in beside you dumping, scared the life out of you.
Oh, yeah. Now, was that here in Kodiak?
Yeah.
Wow.
Then from there, I went fishing again.
And you started a family up here? When did you marry your wife?
In 47.
I see. Yeah. I see. So you were single quite a while.
Oh, yeah. I got to start over. You got to delete a part of it. I was married first in 39 to Laura Larson.
Oh.
Yeah, and that's where my son Bob Freeman, you know him?
Right. Yeah,
he's
I know Bob.
Boy.
I didn't know that was your son.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And there's a boy, two boys and a girl.
Right.
Then we were separated, and then after the war, I married Ann here in 47.
Now, did you stay here during the war? In Kodiak?
I changed jobs 25 times during the war. My birthday was 26th of March.
Right.
And I was just 1 year above the age for drafting. And then April 1, they'd raise it a year, but I had my birthday a few days ahead of time. And I was in 1A, but I wasn't called.
Wow.
But I worked every place. I run boats between here and Seattle. I worked for the Army Engineers and Anchorage, drove truck up there. I worked 29 days at Boeing's on the B-29s. I worked for Foss Tug and Barge, for Smythe Tug and Barge, Lawton Lumber Company, Rainier Pulp and Paper, Bonneville Power and Light. I was the head faller between Allen and Bremerton. And when I skipped there, I went back and joined the Merchant Marines in the South Pacific.
How long were you in the South Pacific?
Just one trip. The war ended while I was after... No, the war ended before I shipped out again. Of course, I skipped ship and they couldn't catch me any. I was back here fishing when the war ended.
Did you ever get caught for that?
No. In fact, okay. I got an honorable discharge from the Merchant Marines.
Right. Well, good. That's not too bad.
I got a big deal. It came through... You know, they never... considered the Merchant Marines like they did the Army or the Navy,
right.
The Marines, and they had no benefits whatsoever. And yet percentage-wise, for people enlisted in it, the Merchant Marines had the heaviest loss of anybody in them. And just about 3-4 years ago, they changed it, and I finally got my honorable discharge showed up.
Only a couple years ago, then?
Yeah. And it's kind of funny, another party on the same boat with me, he shipped the same boat, and he sent all his stuff in, and they got no record of even been on the ship. Oh. And I know he was, because it was my half-brother.
not anything. Oh. Yeah. Yeah. Actually, that's pretty bad.
Then I came back after the war here, and I went to see, I made a deal with Port Beale to get out piling. I'll have to tell you that little story then about piling for the salmon traps I told you before.
Yeah, you got to tell me that one.
So I went over to Port Beale to see about getting out piling, and they didn't want to take any more. Howard Bailey said no, that they got poor piling during the war. And about that time, Chuck Turner walked into the office and shook hands, chatted a minute, and I said something to him about it, and he said, well, they'd take some riders for the trap. It was okay with the big owner, and he said, it's up to him. So riders would go on top of the trap to hold the web up. So I asked Chuck Turner, I said, well, how long are they? And he says, what's the matter, can't you tell in the dark how long they were? Because they knew I used to rob their traps in Raspberry Straits.
I remember that story. So what'd you do? You did that with Port Bailey for how long? Were you with Port Bailey?
Well, that I just got the timber on the Fog Neck Island and
I see.
Delivered the pile to them. But I never fished for Port Bailey all the years or worked for them, just sold them stuff.
I see. So you were independent?
Yeah. Then in 1946, when I started the sawmill on Fog Neck Island. And I sold lumber all over. And we sold about 1 million feet a year there. And I had the mill for, 18 years, I guess. So tidal wave took the mill away.
Oh.
It was all built over the water.
Right.
Lost the whole mill and the shops and power house. Didn't lose any family houses, though we lost a lot of equipment. So then I just decided to fish from then on again.
But
I fish salmon every summer, practically. We run the mill all winter and fish in the summer. Except I think 2 years when we were building housing on a Navy base, I sold so much lumber I had to run through the summertime. And when they built these houses, I furnished the timbers underneath all 344 of them. All the foundation work is from our sawmill.
Wow. That's a lot of wood.
I used to tow it in. I had a seine boat called the Lois V before I bought the Power Scout. I had built in 1946 in Seattle. And I went down and ran it up. And I used it for delivering lumber and stuff and towing a 60-foot flat barge. And then later on, I bought the Rosemary for that purpose.
Right.
Then I delivered lumber over to, had a lumber yard in Homer and one in Kenai. We hauled lumber down to Jute Bay, the oil fields, all around the island. And then when the tidal wave came along, I took one look at that and decided I was a crab fisherman for sure.
Decided your fate right there, huh? Yeah, that must have been real hard, though. You lost everything.
And during all these years of milling and that, I also did a lot of construction work. I built the original boat harbor in Kodiak, all of the inner facilities, helped design it and everything, and built the docks at Old Harbor. And then I worked as an engineer for the state to build a 300-foot suspension bridge in Carlick. I hauled everything down there and raised the towers and all that kind of stuff. And wound up finishing the bridge and turned it over to the state.
Is the bridge still there?
The bank slid in and collapsed, and the rivers changed, and they don't even need it anymore.
I see.
The river don't come out of Carlick where it used to at all.
Right. So I've never seen it over there.
So they've got different. I've got pictures of the bridge here.
Well, okay. Yeah, I'd like those.
Shut it off for a second. About 1960, because I used a power scout, hauled everything down in one trip.
No, 60 is when you built this bridge in Carlick? And when did it...
I don't know just when it collapsed.
Okay. 300 feet, that's something else. That's really something.
Here's one of those towers being built on the ground, and it was my choice to set them up.
Oh, I see. This is for the bridge. Wow. Did you go to school for architecture, or...
Did I get away?
Go to college for architecture, for building, or did you just...
No, I just grew up in the logging camps and stuff.
So you knew how to...
When the state guy wanted me to work down there, after I hauled everything for him, he wanted me to work for him, and I wouldn't do it. And he said, well, Donnie, you just had to have me, because I was so used to all this stuff. I said, I never even graduated from high school. And you have to have a licensed engineer.
Right.
So he went to the governor and got a special permit for me to work on that.
Really? So
This is all my equipment that I use down there. This is my flat barge. I put my donkey on it, logging unit. And I anchored that in the river, two anchors up river, two anchors down river. Then I could move it any way I wanted it. And we had to preload the stuff on the bridge in order to get the cables to stretch the right ways before they really built the thing.
I see.
It was quite an operation.
I'll tell you, 300 feet is a long, long bridge.
Well, this one was when I was 1958, and I was building the inner boat harbor here in town, the one that went out in the earthquake.
These are really nice. Oh, look at you.
Those are the days when you had no rigging on the boat. You pulled your sand by hand, you pursed it and bailed and pitched them, no power on the boat at all.
And you have a farmer's tan.
Yeah.
Quite the handsome guy there.
There's the boat I was laying alongside when there was a big explosion and starting to fire on it.
Did you get it out?
Okay. No, I took all the people off.
And that was in 1970?
I guess so. That's the picture's got a date on it.
Yep, it does.
I'm going to say Francisco V is the name of it.
Okay. Wow, that's a nice picture.
Bendixson Fisheries. East Point, it's called East Point now.
So it's still fishing?
It was rebuilt.
I see.
Oh, it was a processor, floating processor. I took 35 people off it. This is a little boat called the Fufu.
You've told me about this boat before. Did this go down with the...
No, I used it to raise a boat that I'd sank.
Now, where are you? Where is this anchored at? That looks like Yuzinki Narrows right there.
Well, you come pretty close. It's actually at the other end of Whale Island.
I see. Oh, okay, you're going through the other way.
In fact, I'm anchored right over the top of the boat that's laying on the bottom, 43 feet under.
What boat was laying on the bottom?
The Yuyak, the one that I sank.
Oh. How many boats did you sink?
Just one.
Oh, okay.
I was all alone when that happened.
Thought I'd check.
Oh, here happened to be a picture of some lumber at my sawmill.
Now, this was the one on the Pogneck? This is the only... Okay. And you lost all of this, huh?
I got a lot of pictures of it somewhere.
That's something. I'd like to take these and put them in with my report. So, Dale, are you going to tell me about the water?
About which?
The public officials.
Oh.
And the water. You got to tell me that story.
Well, there was a lot of... Oh, you got that thing on?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, there was a lot of things happening in town. And one of them, 41, I was living on Mission Road, and we rented water from two city officials. They had a pump at the foot of 7th Street there, a big well house. And I think we paid $10 or $15 a month for water. I can't remember what it was. And that went on for a couple of years until the city extended the street and dug up the water line up on what is Rezanoff now. And our water was shut off. Come to find out, those guys didn't have a well. They had it tied into the city and selling city water.
Well, we can't say who those city officials were.
I don't know. I told you we had a jailbreak here in town, too.
Oh.
Newt Solberg was a jailer. The old jailer's long gone now, and they had a couple of Yuzinki boys in for some reason. I don't know. But they, during the night, they conked him on the head and just beat it. And they were trying to find him. And finally, the boys went out Mill Bay and hiked through the woods. And they were over by Yuzinki and Arrows. And Burl Clymer and I had an airplane, a Ronecker, four place sedan them days. And Burl took the U.S. Marshal, McKenzie, and the U.S. Marshal, and we called him Mac. Flew him over there, and the two sheriffs were going up the beach to the Allers, and they thought the guys were in the Allers, and there's yelling, and Burroughs taking movie pictures of them. And I see these pictures, and Mac McKinley, was behind the U.S. Marshal, and he took his gun out and put it in there and pulled the trigger to try to make scare them guys in the bush. And that marshal jumped that high in the
air. Did they get the guys out of the bush?
Yeah, they got them out of the bush. Brought them back to town. That's the only jailbreak I know of. Although they had one woman prisoner, Fanny Fury, that set the jail on fire when they put her in. She tried to burn it down while they were in it. A lot of the guys knew her by a different name, but
one of the local women, I think.
Yeah.
So when did you retire, Dale? When did you retire?
Oh, in 83 I sold a boat and quit fishing. But I worked for King Crab. I'd been fishing for them altogether about 17 years. So I repaired their forklifts and some of their trucks and took care of their hydraulic pallet boards and stuff like that, until they changed hands, and then I just quit altogether.
I see. But you still go out to a cabin in a fog net? Your cabin?
When?
Well, no, where is your cabin located?
It's in a fog neck bay, Leknik River, Fog Neck River. It goes by two names. Depends upon whether you're a newcomer or an oldcomer, you know. But it's Fog Neck River and the Fog Neck Bay.
Okay. How long have you owned that?
Well, I really don't. It's your son owns it. Because I can't own property on the island. It has to be a Navy.
Oh, I see. But how long have you
built it in 78, started.
I see.
My gosh, 8 years. 8 years is still out.
And you still go out there by yourself? And
oh, yeah.
Yeah. Fascinating. So, you've been in Alaska for 70 years or 60 years?
Well, from 37 to 96.
30 and 60 years.
58 years. 59, going on 59 years.
Are you glad you stayed here?
I plan on staying.
Yeah. Figured. You have a nice place. Well, do you have any more people you want to get in trouble, Dale? Do you want to talk about anybody else?
Oh, I could say a few things about Harold Hagman, I suppose.
Yeah. Tell us about Harold.
I don't know whether I should or not. Harold was also a nice guy to hunt and fish with. We fished together a lot and boated together and did a lot of things. They had bear hunted. And one time we was on the mainland and we seen a bear way up on the ledge in the grassland. We thought get up and get a, I want to get a picture of a bear standing up looking at me with a camera. So Harold took my rifle and I took my camera, and we sneaked up through there and come up from behind some alder bushes where he could look around. The bear was laying down. He looked at us, and I stepped out and he didn't move. And I walked towards him a little ways and he didn't move. And so I waved and hollered at him with the camera, and all at once he jumped up and turned around and ran. I was taking those pictures and I heard Harold make a thump, and I looked back and he was stretched out on the ground with my rifle. And there was hummocks and grass were high, you know. He fell over one of them and fell down. When he got up, he had a ptarmigan. He picked it up. The gun barrel broke his ptarmigan's neck and was hiding in the grass.
Free food. Oh, boy. But you got the pictures, huh?
I got the picture. I didn't get a picture of the bear standing up, though. I just got a picture running. I had a movie camera.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, I've got about over 5,000 feet of 16 millimeter film over the years.
Do you still have it, the film?
Oh, yeah. Only you can't get film for it anymore, and you can't get it processed. The fact is, I got some film that's not processed.
Yeah, that's probably true.
But then 16 millimeters, a lot better than 8 millimeter ever was. And right. The fact is, he put it on 24 frames and use it in the theater.
Yeah, you could also get him to put it onto videotape.
We're trying to. We've put some of it, but haven't been too successful. But it seems like as time goes on, they're getting better methods of doing it.
Yeah, that'd be fascinating.
But the stuff is getting so brittle.
Yeah. Better do it now.
Some of us is over 40 years old, you know.
Right. Yeah, I wonder if you could just make photos, you know, of it.
Yeah. At one time I took some little negatives to the Photoshop to see if they could enlarge them. They said they couldn't do it. But today I know they can.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a lot better. So any other good stories about Harold?
Well, I might tell you the first time I knew who he was in 39.
He'll never hear this tape, Dale.
Muskin River doesn't enter the bay now where it used to. Mm-hmm. They moved the river over this way so they built the airport.
Airport, yeah.
And where it used to come out was right straight into the bay. And I was fishing with Jack Battaglia and Jimmy McCormick in 39. He went to Buskin to see if he couldn't scrape out a few fish, and there was a boat with the gear right across the creek. They did this all the time with little boats. And there was two guys up the river with a plunger coming down chasing fish, and that's the first time I met Harold Egg.
Creek robbing, huh?
Oh, everybody did it.
Oh, yeah.
Well, those little boats, they'd only carry 700-800 fish, he really didn't hurt nothing.
Oh, there wasn't that many boats around either.
No, there wasn't. I remember there was only 80 units of gear fishing on the whole island, counting gill netters.
How many canneries then?
See, Kodiak had about a little over 600 people when I came here. It was all downtown. There was, up here where we're sitting now was a lake, you know, and all timber.
Right.
But there was only one cannery in town, a little floater. Frank McConaughey had a little barge, had a cannery on it. And I think it was his second year in town. He used to have the cannery at Kukak, and it burnt down, so then he started a little floater here in town. And Port Bailey used to be on this dock downtown, Kodiak Fisheries. And I think in 36 they moved it. They built Port Bailey, and 37 was the first year they canned fish at Port Bailey.
Do you know anything about the Kaluta Bay cannery? What is, who's that?
Kaluta?
Yeah. There's that old cannery site there?
Yeah, that was Shearwater Fisheries.
Right.
And that belonged to Port Bailey.
And how long did that run?
I really don't know. I think the tidal wave put an end to it.
Yeah, that's what it looks like.
I know it did, in fact.
Yeah, that's what it looks like. I've been out there.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was just curious. So Harold's still alive. We know that, huh?
Yeah. Harold and I went trout fishing one morning when I had an airplane my own for 4 years. I think it was probably along about 1960 when Harold was fire marshal, fire chief here in town in D.C., as well as driving oil truck. Or did he drive oil truck then? He did off and on, I think, for Erie. And anyhow, I picked him up one morning. We went up a Paranosa Lake and hiked up the creek and started fishing. And it was real brushy, so you couldn't just cast out like you do in a lake. So we'd take a hook and just swing it out. And the fish were so hungry, sometimes if your hook didn't touch the water with the bait, the fish jumped at it. Harold had a jacket on with a pocket in the back, and he kept putting trout in his back. Pretty soon it started dropping out. He had so many of them. I don't know how many he caught in that upper part of that creek. So we went back down the airplane. We had all we could pack. We had a fish basket full. We had them on sticks, you know, while you string them on sticks. And we got in the airplane. I said, well, let's go down the lower end of the lake and get the big ones now. It was just glassy flat. And I took off, and I just thought I'd just stay above the water going down there. And I did, just about a foot off the water. And I got just to the other end. I chopped and set on the water. And the lake had fell about 10 inches since I was there. It was a gravel bar. So we slid up on the, but it was just about, just underwater, but because we were right flat on the water, you couldn't see it.
Oh, I see. So it was only an inch or so.
So we got out and pushed the airplane off into the water and taxied on down the outlet of the lake. And we caught big ones in the same way. We caught fish we couldn't quit. So we got to the waterfalls, and then he got a hold of a steelhead and broke his line. And I said, now the big ones got away. Let's call it off. We come home and went out to the fire hall. They had a great big sink. He lived in the building that was the fire hall. Had a great big sink. We dumped all our fish in there and cleaned them and counted them and divided them. We had 268 rainbows. I didn't go fishing for years after. We froze them. We had fish until I don't know when he went trout fishing again.
Boy. And that was where? Where did you, like Karluk?
No, it was on Fog Neck Island.
Oh, I see.
They call it Discovery Lake now, but it's Paranosa Lakes.
Right.
Them days. Paranosa River.
So you and Harold have been friends for...
Oh, yeah.
Long time.
Another time, I was out early in the morning looking during elk season. Mm-hmm. And you could use your airplanes them days. And I was about 4 o'clock in the morning, I was circling over Big Raspberry Island, and I found a herd of elk just above a little lake up on there. But there was fog laying on the lake. And then I thought, Harold was fishing with, was hunting. I knew he was out on a hunting party, but I'll tell you who it was, too. I'll be darned, I got a mental block. But anyhow, I knew he was on that little boat, so I thought, I'll go pick up Harold and we'll come back this lake. Maybe the fog will be gone. And there was a skiff rowing out from the beach, and it was Harold, one of their men, Milton Bargano, was on it. And Milton had been lost overnight. No, he hadn't, and the other guys had, because Milton was on the boat. Anyhow, Harold grabbed that guy's gun and jumped in the airplane and let the guy row onto the boat, and we took off. We circled that lake, and a darn fog set right on that lake. And there was this elk bedded down up here. And we just, that I'd been on, and it was just all grassland right at the lake, and I could see maybe 10 feet of water at the edge of this lake. So I just dropped my little plane, come down on the grass, and hit that water and shot in the fog and shut it off. We found a way back to the beach again. We snuck up through the grass from our hands and knees up to those elk, and we decided we must be just about right close to them. So he raised up, and there was elk all around us. We was right in the middle of the herd. They were bedded down. And Harold took this rifle he borrowed. He never had it before. And we both stood up, and he shot at one bull, and I shot another. My gun misfired. His went off, and then he was down on the ground. And look, all the shells fell out of the bottom. He was down in the grass trying to find some more shells. And we both got a bull elk, though.
Oh, you got him.
Oh, yeah. My next shell didn't miss. And so we butchered him, and we packed a loaded piece down to the airplane, put him in a plane, and I flew it out the boat and brought Milton Bagano back with me. That's the first time he rode in a little airplane. So he and Harold packed me down the lake while I flew it to the boat and flew it home. And by right after lunch, we had all the elk meat on the boat and my elk at the home.
All the way here to Kodiak or in the fog net?
Fog net. I was living at the mill in these.
Yeah. So did you live at the mill until 64, until the earthquake?
No, we moved into town. The kids had to go to high school. We had our own school, you know.
Right. You had your own school out there?
Yeah.
How many people did you have working for you?
The most we ever had was 22 people. We had eight families all together, built it up to eight families. So. And I forget what year it was when we had to start our kids at grade school. So I built a schoolhouse, and I hired a teacher myself. We got books from Oregon, Washington, from Kodiak, school books. Got the desks from a school in Oregon. And we hired an elderly woman named Mrs. Ross. She couldn't get a job teaching school because of her age. And you couldn't have found a better person. And I had her for 3 years. So I was a school board, you see. The wife and I.
That was it.
So that's quite an experience, being a complete school board. And then I talked to Territory and the first the teacher. And then we had a couple of good ones, but we had a couple of terrible ones. And there was 10 children in school. Took 10 to open the school. Could drop down to 8 at times if we did have only 8 after school got going. One year we was too shy, so I borrowed 3 kids from town for 6 weeks to open the school and brought them back to town.
Yeah, that was a state law, wasn't it, or a rule, yeah.
State law.
So you had to borrow some kids.
And we had a woman teacher that was separated from her husband. I guess she decided to give it another try, so that midterm, Christmas time, she left. So the state gave us another fellow by the name of Toothacre. I don't know, he just came by himself anyhow. So on the way over, I picked him up in town, came him on the boat, and I told him that we were having trouble with one kid in school. The teachers couldn't handle him. And I don't care what he did to break him. I said, and if you can't do it, I'll just have to fire his dad and move the family out of camp. And the way the mill was set up on the edge of the beach, why, family houses started on one side and right on around the other, so there's long spread. The school was about 100 yards from the back of the mill, and there's family house that I won't say the name was on the other side over here. Mm-hmm. And the mill was shut down, and I happened to walk out the back of the machine shop just as I heard the school door slam and the big kid yelling that he's I'm going home and tell my dad you come over and beat hell out of you for that, because evidently the school teacher whopped him in school. He had all he could take. This kid went running across. I watched him go and slammed into his house. And about 2 seconds later, out of the schoolhouse came Toothacre. Right across, he never stopped. He just barged right into that house. Sometime later, the kid's father was down on the dock, and I says to him, I said, "Do you have a little problem with your place?" He says, "Problem, man." He says, "That's a school teacher." He says, "You come barging into my house." He says, "I walked through a kid. If you don't like it, I'll whip you too." He never had no more trouble in that school.
Nope, probably took care of it.
That was the best teacher I ever had.
Oh, boy. So you've done about everything. I mean, you've been a school board and a logger and a machinist and a...
I put in 3 years on the harbor board. Put in a year on the Planning and Zoning Board. But I don't care for those committees. I never was built to go along with a lot of things.
Yeah, it's real hard to be part of a group like that. It sounds like you did enough on your own. So did you ever own any property in Kodiak, or was it a fog neck?
Well, I own 6 lots out on Mission Road, and I built a home out there, and then I built an apartment building, and then I cleaned up a big area. I'm going to build a big apartment building, and I wound up in a boat accident with a power scow. Guy's drunk, and I couldn't prove whose fault it was, because you can't prove they were drunk in court. And it cost me our home and all the property, and that's how come I got moved into here.
So you lost everything with that one, huh?
Yeah. Boy. I lost both the home and duplex and the lots that I had all surveyed and laid out, and the city put the water into it. I was all ready.
And that guy got him? The guy that hit you?
No. They had to be sold to pay off.
Oh, the legal debt. So you just had to start over from scratch then. How old were you when that happened?
Well, that happened in 66.
You're still pretty young.
So it was 68 before it came to the heading.
You lost your boat then, too?
No, I didn't lose the boat.
That's good. So that's how you made your income back?
Yeah.
So did you never bought any more land except for this?
Just this. Oh, I did. I bought one piece of land on the Shy, by golly. I bought sight unseen, 2.8 acres out on Island Lake. And it was kind of odd. I was mad at the bank over all this other thing, because they had the insurance department. They handed me back my papers and said I wasn't covered, and I hired 2 different lawyers, but I couldn't prove nothing. I'll have to tell you about the winter of 46-47 was one of the coldest ones we ever had here. The Fognik Straits all froze, and Kuprana Straits froze. You couldn't get into the village of Fognik, you couldn't get into my sawmill. And I was in town. I came to town with a boat, and I was stuck in here 6 or 7 days or longer. The northwest went down, it was 6 below 0. And a bunch of people wanted to go back to Fognik, and the Wakefields were in town. It was January. So I had, the lowest fee, I had 20 people on board when I left town here. And I had to put it in on the beach between where the ice broke by my sawmill above us, where we live. We didn't have a mill yet. We just had a little piece of dock to be able to put gear on. And I went to my house, and there was nobody there. And then hiked over to the village and packed. The daughter was just a baby. I had to pack it. There was 3 miles. The snow was about that deep, and down below 0. You know, she can tell you more about it. You willing to talk, dear?
Uh-oh. You're very good.
Looks like she doesn't want to talk then.
I'm
no good at it either.
Well, this is fine. This turned out good.
But there was a lot of... I guess she went over to the Hans Olsen's place, didn't she?
I went to Gertrude's.
Yeah.
Veristop's.
Oh, Veristop. Anyhow, I didn't know what had happened. The fire was out. The house was froze. The only thing that didn't freeze was half a sack of potatoes, because our dog was sleeping on top of it.
That's it.
And the people walked from our place to the village, except Howard Wakefield and his wife. And we stayed overnight, and then in the morning, and the tide floated the boat off the high tide mark, I took them to Wakefield, but I had to to go up and go down Cooper Elliff, clear out into Chillicothe and back in the other end of Raspberry Straits. I just got to the dock at Iron Creek. The ice was froze right out to the dock. And they had to walk from there past Vida down to this way to the right. Then next day I got home, got the fire going. What happened? The oil pipe froze up and the stove went out.
Oh, man.
So I got that going, then I hiked over to the village, found her.
Well, I had to be
a couple of days later, her brother came hiking in from up Raspberry Straits. He walked across the bay with a dog with a pack sack on his back with a pup in it.
Just right across the bay. It was frozen out solid.
Right down Raspberry Straits.
You're kidding.
The ice was that thick.
Man. Oh, it had to be cold then.
It was.
Because Raspberry Strait has a pretty good current.
Yeah, but what happened is kind of unique. Everything was froze like a billiard ball. And it turned to and poured down rain just as hard as you ever seen it for a day and a night. And the water couldn't soak in. It all just ran off the land. And there wasn't a breath of air moving. And the temperature dropped down to 6 below 0 there.
So it was all fresh water on
and
top.
And that fresh water standing on top of the bay just set up right now. Hans Olsen and a bunch of the other people had their boats in Back Bay at Fognick, where they kept them. It's open to the southwest. And it froze solid. I don't know how many boats it froze in, but Hans Olsen was afraid that when it break up, it was going to take their boats out.
Right.
So he and Thorgel and his boys took a crosscut saw and they sawed a trench and widened a little wider in the boat all the way out. I don't know how long it took them to do this, the big crosscut saw on the ice. And then up come a southwest wind and broke the ice up, so they didn't need to do it at all.
A lot of work for nothing.
Yeah.
How long was the ice around for?
Well, it lasted for probably a week. It was frozen.
Man.
You know that light on the rock going towards Whale Pass, the other side of Yozinki?
Yep.
The ice built right up on that, and the storm was so big when it, in those northwesters, it just broke that off. It was laying flat when I went home.
Wow. That must have been, that's too cold. That's too cold.
Well, we also had a lot of bear come around the camp.
During that cold spell?
No, all the time we had a mill there. It was a great place for bear. It was always coming around, hanging around. I don't know how many bear we killed altogether, but the one bear story I'll tell you. Well, there was a big one hanging around. He had a track 11 inches across, and they'd find his tracks around the buildings at night, and we've got all these little kids, you know. So I had my rifle loaded and sitting up high, like on top of that, where the little kids couldn't reach it.
Right.
And I got up just at daylight one morning, just after daylight. I had to do something down on the beach, and I looked out my window, and the house was about from here to the middle, here to the street from the bay. And there was 4 bear there coming up towards the house. So I ran, and I grabbed my rifle, and I ran out the river, out this door like this, down the porch, and up over the bank come these bear. And I'm about from here to the light from the big one, where it stood up and looked at me. I shot it from the waist like this, and his chin went over. Then I shot 2 more. I killed the first three shots. That time a little dog ran out one of the house, was barking at the other, and I wounded it. And then I thought, well, now it's time to reload my gun. And I went to get some shells, and I discovered I was naked. I didn't have a stitch of clothes on. So I was really bear shooting.
Yeah, that is bear shooting.
The kids were looking out the window, the neighbors were looking out. I ran back, put my pants on, grabbed my shells, went down, I got the other, killed the other bear too. 6 days later, we killed 3 more bear right there.
What side of a fog neck were you on?
Where was the mill?
Yeah.
If you go up Fog Neck Straits, you just past the village of a fog neck.
Right.
And just around the point, there was a mill. Where Ike and Mary Shepherd live now. In fact, this Ike and Mary's house was our last schoolhouse I built. And when I closed out the school, we built a road to the village, and
Right.
And then I bought a station wagon for the people to drive the kids to school back and forth.
Kind of a school bus thing.
Yeah.
I see. So you had roads and everything.
Well, eventually I went into truck logging. And so we had our own logging, made our own logging trucks out of, bought old trucks and put beds on them and made our own trailers and logging arches. Made our own gas donkey, eventually made my own steel towers. We did the first truck logging on the island area. We did the first high lead logging with donkeys. Built the first logging roads on the Fogney. First roads, as far as I know. Before, start with, while I used to climb the trees and limb them and top them and hang the rigging. And I didn't have done that for a long time.
Yeah, it's pretty scary though. It's really fascinating. So, how many kids do you have? How many children do you have? You have six kids? Six children?
Three with my first wife.
Yeah.
And then adopted two, and then we had four more.
That's more than six kids, Dale. That's a lot of kids. Do they all still live here in Alaska? Your kids all live here?
No. My first marriage, Bob is the only one that's living in Alaska. Dick, the younger boy, he's single. I don't know where he is any given time. He trades in ivory and does ivory work, beautiful work. He's an artist, you know. And sometimes I ask Bob where he is. Well, he's on the Diomedes, or he's in Frisco, or he's just all over.
I see.
And the daughter, the girl after Bob, she's way up in the government on this foreigners coming in, the immigration. And right now she's in Portland, Oregon, but she was all over Washington, Oregon,